There we are. Thank you.
Go ahead and give it a few more minutes. Wait for Commissioner Lane to finish up her phone call, and we'll be starting real quickly. Here. Okay, good evening. Welcome to tonight's meeting of the City of Tucson Planning Commission. My name is Chris Ortiz-Pino, and I'm the chair of the Planning Commission. And I have an echo. Give me one second. Don't know why that's muted. The responsibilities of this body are to advise the mayor and council and the Planning Development Services Department on the adoption of long-range plans, policies, specific plans, and regulations that affect land use and development. Will staff please call the roll?
Certainly, Chair Ortiz-Pino.
Present.
Vice Chair Kinney.
Present.
Commissioner Lampo.
Here.
Commissioner Lane.
Here.
Commissioner McKenzie. Commissioner Schwartz.
I'm here.
Commissioner Small. Commissioner Walczak.
Present.
Commissioner Zagir, or excuse me, Commissioner Wellot. Commissioner Young.
Here.
And Commissioner Zagir.
Here.
Let the record reflect that a quorum is present.
Thank you, Carver. I'd like to call the next item, number two, approval of legal action report from March 12, 2025. Chair would entertain a motion for approval.
I motion for approval.
Second.
Okay, any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor of the legal action report on March 12, 2025, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, all those opposed say nay. Hearing none, go ahead and pass that and move on to item number three, public hearing on the update to the City of Tucson's general plan, Plan Tucson. This is the second of two public hearings scheduled for the update to the City of Tucson's general plan, Plan Tucson. Would staff please provide their presentation?
Good evening, commissioners. Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you to the members of our community. I am sincerely happy to present our second public hearing on the general plan update for Plan Tucson 2025. Sorry, getting off to a good start here. So you are all very familiar with the material for tonight's presentation. So I will try to be brief. But for those who are less familiar with our process, we will be going over what is the general plan, what has been our update process timeline up to this point, talking about our preliminary draft and the engagement process that we had in January to take in feedback, what the revisions and feedback was, and what revisions were put out in our March 5th edition of the draft, and then a summary of our March 12th public hearing and the results of that, followed and ending with our next steps. So for those who do not know, the general plan is a long-range planning document that is required by state law. Depending on the size of the population, it needs to cover a range of different issues. Ours must include things such as general distribution of land use, circulation of transportation, safety, housing, how we coordinate with our traffic controllers. And what is also unique about this document is that it is required to go to the public for a vote for final ratification. The process to update our general plan began in 2022 after Mayor and Council directed our office to begin the update process of our current general plan, which was last passed in 2013, excuse me. And then in 2023 in earnest, we began our process to update. So for the last year and a half, we've been working continuously with the public to engage and reflect on how we can bring the current values of our community into line with what our general plan has to make sure that it is accurate reflection of what our community wants to see moving forward and how policy direction will move over the next 10 years. In the first phase of that process, we reached out to some 2,000 plus residents asking simple questions of what do we want to see Tucson have in the future? What do we care about? What are the opportunities, threats, and challenges that we see in our city? And how do we address them? And with the feedback we got from that first phase, we formed into five themed working groups that covered issues from climate, water action, green space, transportation, mobility, access, community resources, economic vitality, and housing, neighborhood design, and neighborhoods. And in those five working groups, residents of our community met in 18 different working group sessions, which lasted over 2 to 3 hours each, to really dive in deep for what the policies and goals to address our community's concerns should be for the general plan. And to make sure that we were also casting a broader net for those who could not attend the working groups, we also held 6 community forums, which were held on weekend and evening hours to make sure we can capture a broader stretch of the community. And all told from that, we were able to gather another 677 attendees and 750 plus comments. And then we began our drafting process, which was the summer of last year. And we had at that time 20 goals and over 300 plus policies for what we thought the community wanted to make sure was actionable. And our feedback was that this was a lot of information. We wanted to condense it, have it more simplified. And so we went back to the drawing board and clarified what were the really core values and key features we wanted to see in our general plan. And so in December of last year, we were able to put together our first preliminary draft of the plan. It was really important to us to make sure that the plan was legible, that information was easily accessible. And so it was organized into 5 chapters to cover the broad stretch of information that the general plan has to cover. So the first chapter is introductory material, really just what is the general plan? How do we get to creating it? What was the principles we put in place for engaging with the community to make sure that it was reflective of our community? And what were the phases for the general plan update? The second chapter really is for folks who are new to the community, or if you knew someone who was hoping to come here or invest in our community. It has a timeline of our 4,000 years of continuous inhabitation condensed into a few pages, and then a set of current conditions that show what is Tucson like today for housing, for transportation, what are our environmental conditions, our cultural resources, and gives a highlight of what Tucson looks like today. It ends with a section on neighborhoods, which are one of the primary first tier groups that we interact with, as not just for planning processes, but for all city functions, to make sure that we were engaging with the public at large and seeing how we communicate with them. So a section is dedicated to the efforts that neighborhoods put forth to make change in our community. Come on now. There it goes. Chapter 3 is where the bulk of the plan lives. So it's our values, goals, and policies. In the end, there were 14 goals that were identified that we feel are reflective of what the community has told us is important to address in our community over the next 10 years. Everything ranging from transparency and governance to resilience and climate change, housing, education, water resources, land use, and transportation are all different features in our goals represented in the plan. Each of them has their own set of policies, broad-range strategies to help achieve the goals. And to kind of illustrate the interconnected nature of all of our goals, policies that appear in one goal will appear in another. Chapter 4 really is where we think about the long-range aspect of our general plan. So we know from the Pima Association of Governments that some 24,000 people will be moving to the city in the next 10 years. And from housing projections that we got from Eco Northwest, we know that we'll need some 33 housing units to help not just the people moving here, but also people who are growing up in our community, as well as our unhoused population are trying to transition into housing, and residents of the University of Arizona who decide to stay. So how we accommodate for that growth, where we can place them in our community to also meet our other goals for open space preservation and for more active and better transit use, this chapter is where we address those concerns and changes. Chapter 5 for implementation really is thinking about how do we make sure to implement these lofty goals, and our main focus and strategy for that was to incorporate all of the other existing documents that our city has produced. We have a specific plan for housing, for transit mobility, for climate resilience, and all of them had their own outreach processes, which we didn't want to discard. So we made sure to incorporate the language of those plans as the foundation for the policies of our goals, and making sure that this document found a way to quickly connect folks to those plans as the implementation steps for our goals and policies. It also includes a list of near, mid, and long-term projects that will occur over the next 10 years to kind of give beacons for making sure we see where progress is done in our city. So there are projects from each of the different departments in our city organization that are highlighted over the next 0 to 3, 3 to 5, and 7 to 10 years. Oh, wait. There we go. So when we brought this to the public, it was December 16th of last year with our preliminary draft. And so we gave people the holidays to really absorb, read it, forget about it, and come back. And in the second week of January, we really started our outreach in earnest. And so in a lightning round, we held 4 in-person feedback sessions across the city, 2 virtual sessions. We met with different boards and commissions to hear their expertise, a number of stakeholder groups from neighborhood associations, development stakeholders, to interest groups to get their feedback on the general plan. And then for those who could not attend any of our functions, we had individual surveys available online and a tool called Meeting in a Box, which allowed residents to gather their own team together and have resources to answer the same questions that we were asking at any of our events and get material back to us. And so by the end of January, we had 827 comments from the public, the majority of those focused in chapters 3 and 4. We also heard from folks, regardless of where they were in the process, that it was important to stress how neighborhoods were reflected in our document. And in the 2013 version, like in the 2025 version, there is this section talking about how neighborhoods are important in our community. But for this version of the plan, we want to make sure and incorporate them into the plan's policies throughout the document. So there are 10 goals where neighborhood functions appear, and about 15 policies where they are specifically mentioned that talk about how they're involved in community decision-making, celebrating local heritage, preserving the heritage of neighborhoods, and enhancing environment and protection of neighborhoods. And these are just some examples of the policies that specifically mentioned how neighborhoods are impacted and help to impact the progress of the general plan. With our revised draft, after all the feedback we got in January, we made about 44 policy revisions, added another 19 development guidelines, added additional layers of context to the maps that we had in the draft plan, as well as 4 new appendices that covered a range of information, including an ARS matrix, which shows a checklist of how we met all of the criteria for state law for the general plan, a policies and goals list, which is a more quick reference sheet for all the different goals and policies that are in the document, an expanded history section on how the TCC was developed and kind of lessons learned from planning and how we're hoping to change that in the future for a better good, and a number of other of additional informations that we have, including a technical memo for how we developed our future growth scenario map. We also have extended content for where we missed or where additional information that the public said was important to express included in the document. And because it is a 300-page plus document, before all that, we created an executive summary, which is a more concise 10 pages to more clearly go over what's in the general plan. So the extended content includes things like talking about the University of Arizona, the impact of I-10, and a challenges section. We heard from folks that the first draft of the plan really was a little too rosy, didn't talk about some of the challenges we face in our community. So we added a section in Chapter 2 talking about what we are doing to address and how we have continue to face issues with our growing unhoused population, with potholes in the city, as well as rising concerns about climate change and how that's impacted the community differently than it has in the past. So that is included in Chapter 2. For new policies, in addition to revised language, we have these ones, which the community has told us is a better reflection of some more intentional designs for land use, for ecosystems, for climate. And then these are just some examples of changes in policy language. So things like making sure we're being more intentional about the populations served or the ones that are being focused on as we improve our community. So we heard from our residents who advocate for residents with disabilities, as well as our elder populations, that we want to make sure to stress their importance and how we are focusing policies towards them. We want to make sure that we are thinking about how we are going to actually enforce various policies. So we included language to more clearly define how different language was going to be, how different policies were going to be implemented. For example, in our outdoor lighting code. And also making sure that we're thinking more intentionally about the kinds of design. So universal design was a feature in the preliminary draft. We want to make sure and expand language about that throughout the document and in our development guidelines. Our future growth scenario map, this is the third iteration that is in our revised draft. From the first version of in the preliminary draft, it was centered on information we got from a number of surveys telling us where people want to see different levels of intensity across the city, different kind of land uses. And in the second draft, we were asking folks, does this reflect what you want to see? And for the most part of the nearly 200 comments we got, people said, yes, we think that this is an accurate reflection of what we want to see develop over the next 10 years. The changes we did see were from various groups who told us more specifically some issues they had. For instance, the Tucson International Airport told us that there were some building blocks that we had in their flight path, which would be detrimental for safety. So we reduced the intensity along Valencia to better align with the concerns for the Tucson International Airport. Residents in Ward 1 told us that we want to see a greater mix of uses in the west of I-10, so we've added another community center. And then we've reduced the intensity along 22nd, where there wasn't a mixed-use activity center, or sorry, mixed-use corridor, play it down to a neighborhood corridor to reflect the area plan or the neighborhood plan in that area. And additionally, these are some changes that TIA gave us to make sure that we're creating better, more accurate reflection of the future development that's going to be happening around Tucson International Airport by increasing the amount of industrial use there. Come on. So each of those different colors, as you may be aware, represent different building blocks or future land uses. So whereas zoning is more prescriptive, telling you what can and cannot be built in an area, the development guidelines or the building blocks really are supposed to be characters for an area. So whether it be a more predominantly residential, lower scale development like a neighborhood, or very intense mix of uses such as in the downtown or a mixed-use activity center, each of them has their own set of characteristics we're trying to encourage, and they all come with their own set of development guidelines. So some of the new development guidelines that we saw come out of the revised draft were things like making sure we're being more focused on ADA compliance, on things like universal design, and how we can be supportive of the outdoor lighting code throughout the city, making sure that we're trying to keep our dark skies dark. And so that was released on March 5th. March 12th, we held our first public hearing, and we heard from the commission that we wanted to hear more about how action items were going to be implemented into the document, some of the engagement metrics that we'd received and how we compared to other localities, and where funding sources were coming forward to help implement the goals of the plan. From the public, we heard concerns about how we're going to underground utilities, greater emphasis on how we're dealing with the urban heat island effect, and where Tucson's vision is described in the plan and how we can better bolster that to make it a more clear vision. So these are just some of the responses that we want to share with y'all. So again, when we think of the implementation of the plan, we really want to think about how it is tied to those functional plans. So these are just some examples of policy language that is in Plan Tucson and how it relates to action items within functional plans. So these are a few from transportation that relate in TRT, from housing into PCHIP, and those are more specific, more detailed action items that are driven by the guidance of the general plan. At least that is our plan. For undergrounding utilities specifically, we do have a development guideline which reads as follows: improve the appearance of above ground utilities and structures by requiring facilities to be located, installed, and maintained to minimize visual impact and preserve access to views. Utilities should be installed underground where possible, and the visual impact of above ground utility infrastructure should be prime consideration in the city's acceptance and approval. So that is language that's from two current development guidelines that we have in the 2013 plan that were merged together for more succinctness. But we do have language in our general plan that that tries to get at this notion of how we can make sure to preserve the aesthetics of our community and how we coordinate with utilities. For the urban heat island response, we heard a member of the public talk about one policy. We just wanted to clarify that there are actually several policies across the document that do talk about how the city is trying to become more resilient to heat over the next 10 years, and specifically for how we can mitigate those results through the built environment, through development guidelines and policies across the board. And then for future technology, we heard that, you know, we want to make sure that we're a future forward-thinking city. So these were just a few of the examples of policies that really try to guide us towards really investing in the kind of technology that will guide us towards being not only more sustainable, but also help bring in new investments into our community so that we think about how we will progress over the next 10 years, both economically and with an improved environment. So the next steps, we are hoping that after this meeting, we will hear a recommendation from y'all. On April 22nd, we're having a session with Mayor and Council for them to place the general plan on the ballot. That's per state law. They need to have a vote to put it on the ballot 180 days prior to the election, but it will not be for the final version of the plan. That will come on May 20th when we have our last public hearing with Mayor and Council, where people will still have a chance to voice their opinion one last time before before Mayor and Council adopts the general plan. And then in November, when it'll be the really decision of the public of whether it'll be ratified and it becomes our new general plan. In the meantime, we're going to be still talking to folks. We'll be at a number of community events. We were just at Ciclovia last week, a lot of fun. We'll be at the Dia de Niñez on April 26th if you go to El Pueblo Center. It's a good time for the kids. Tucson Meet Yourself is in October, a good time there. And there'll be a number of opportunities in between now and then where we'll hopefully talk to, again, neighbor associations, developer stakeholder groups, and other interest groups if they want to meet with us. We want to meet with you to talk about this general plan. So lastly, our hope is that at the end of this presentation, y'all will have a recommendation. This is just language we have for you there that staff recommends that Planning Commission recommend the updated general plan, Plan Tucson 2025, be adopted by Mayor and Council. So with that, open up to y'all for questions, and I'm happy to answer.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Go ahead and like to open up to Commission for any questions to staff. Commissioner Zagier.
Hi, this is Commissioner Zagier. So I'm concerning, this is towards the last part. As far as undergrounding utilities, isn't there a requirement along some of our scenic corridors that it's required to underground utilities? And it seems like that maybe you're just saying, oh, well, we can make the poles look prettier. There's nothing that's going to make them look prettier. So what is the view on the issue of undergrounding some of the TEP utilities that are specifically, you know, Campbell-Keno Corridor and Grant Road? So is Plan Tucson going to enforce what we already have on our books as far as requirements for specifically TEP to underground their lines along our scenic corridors?
Thank you, Commissioner. Any of the existing requirements for be it through zoning overlay or within a small area, within an area plan wouldn't be overridden by anything in the general plan. That particular development guideline is for guidance for all areas of the city. So it's trying to provide some encouragement to where possible or where we're able to improve the aesthetic conditions of the city and work with utilities to provide that by undergrounding, because that's the direction that's the preferred preference for development when possible. So will it enforce those things? What will enforce that are the existing regulations within our UDC. Nick, Corn, anything I missed?
Yeah, thank you. So in the Unified Development Code, there is, for when you're looking at a scenic route or a buffer area, some of the permitted improvements can include trenching for the placement of utility lines if the area is revegetated in accordance with 534 of the UDC. So it can be required.
So what you're saying is that is only a suggestion to underground utilities along certain corridors, as it's stated in the UDC. It's not mandatory, as well. It's been a big issue for the last 4 years, 5 years. So I'm just kind of concerned. Or are we just going to say it's okay if you can come up with a good reason not to underground the utilities? I'm just going to reference driving down Country Club. They've got these huge utility poles. It doesn't leave any room for a sidewalk, or it doesn't leave any room for anybody in a wheelchair to go around the pole on the sidewalk. So I'm just wondering, is there any type of, if there's a pedestrian safety factor that's involved with some of the poles that are so close to the roadways?
Commissioner Zier, I just want to add a little more to what Nick and Cesar stated, which is that the general plan is a plan. So it provides policy guidance. It does not override anything in our zoning code. So in the Unified Development Code, we actually do have stronger requirements for undergrounding. And you're correct that on our gateway corridors and scenic corridors, there is a requirement for utilities to be undergrounded. However, there's also special exceptions that exist, and that is what is currently being pursued by TEP as a special exception to those undergrounding requirements. So I just want to reiterate that our Unified Development Code has very specific development standards that are requirements for development. And when we review applications for development, we're reviewing for compliance with all zoning standards. The general plan comes into play, which is not a development standard. The general plan is land use guidance. So that is what we consult when we are reviewing discretionary actions, such as a rezoning or special exceptions and other plan amendments, things of that nature, that usually go to Planning Commission, the Zoning Examiner, Mayor, and Council for review. So in those cases, we do consult general plan policy for guidance. And in most of those situations, we're consulting probably a variety of different general plan policies that might come into bear on a specific zoning action. So I just want to clarify a little bit that yes, we do have requirements for undergrounding in the Unified Development Code. The general plan, though, is policy.
Okay.
And so I don't know if we have Roy Lesk from the City Attorney's Office here, who's very involved in a lot of these conversations about undergrounding. So is there anything you want to add, Roy?
Sure. Commissioner here, commission members. Ms. Manning's correct. The differentiation I think that a lot of folks are focused on is general plans under Arizona state law, and specific plans under Arizona state law, are policy documents. Now, that's not to mean that they cannot be used for regulatory in a regulatory fashion, but in the city of Tucson, we look to regulation through the UDC. The UDC is the expression of those plans, including the general plan, the major streets and routes plan, and specific plans, and those are expressed through specific regulation in the UDC.
Thank you.
Of course.
Okay. Anybody else on the commission have a question for staff? Seeing none, I'd like to go ahead and open this up for public hearing. Is there something I'm supposed to say? I'd like to go ahead and open up this public hearing to members of the public who would like to speak at this item. In general, there is 3 to 5 minutes, depending on the number of speakers. The time limit per speaker this evening is 4 minutes based on the amount of I've received. This may be extended at my discretion. We ask that you please clearly state your name and address before speaking. Members of the commission may ask questions of the speakers, but we ask that each speaker be timely, as we want to make sure that those who would like to be heard have an opportunity. We've had 3 requests to speak at this time, and I'll begin by calling those individuals, starting with Kate Houghton.
Thanks for unmuting me there. Hi there, I'm Kate Houghton. I'm the co-executive director of the Coalition for Sonoran Desert Protection, and I'm authorized to speak on their behalf this evening. I reside at 9063 East Holmes Street, 85710. So first, I want to extend much gratitude to the planning team for their approach to public input and for incorporating the majority of the comments we did submit, which were numerous, and frankly, improving on some of our recommendations above what we had submitted. So we're delighted to see updates made to Plan Tucson that help us to protect and value our natural heritage and resources. So we do want to talk this evening about the conservation lands system and Policy Land Use 21 specifically. So that reads that the city will, I quote, consider the application of the conservation land system in entitlement reviews, end quote. So the CLS is an interconnected regional network of areas of a high biological value. If some parts are overdeveloped, which is what we are worried about, because of different interpretations of what consider means, then we risk losing these nature and wildlife corridors that we really rely on here in the city and that make our city so special. So first, we welcome more effective language used in Plan Tucson, which we've talked to the planning team about, such as encourage instead of consider. But that's secondary really to our main ask of you here tonight. So we appreciate, first of all, that the CLS is a planning tool in Pima County and not the city of Tucson. But we also know that our natural resources don't stop at administrative borders, and we can all respect that. And our washes and river areas, especially here in the city, are categorized by the county, right, as land of the highest quality. And that's land that we should seek to set aside in perpetuity. So I'll give you an example of our neighbors, the town of Oro Valley. So they actually adopted the county's Conservation Land System, or CLS, and integrated into their own environmentally sensitive land ordinance. Tucson could do something similar, right? So while we would love to see Tucson adopt the CLS in full, you can do something shorter. We ask that the city perhaps integrate the CLS as it sees fit in the future growth scenario map, perhaps as a land use category, perhaps alongside that, an update or addition to the environmental resources zones, excuse me, resource zones. Which we know is code, obviously not Plan Tucson, what we're discussing tonight. So we're not talking about downzoning, especially as many of the relevant parcels are currently SR zoned. We're just proposing that we have a much clearer blueprint, really, for rezoning to support you when you're making decisions, to support mayor and council when they're making decisions, and also the owners of these parcels that provide us with the highest biological value here in the city. So thank you again, and we hope to continue working with you on this, and a great job done already.
Thank you very much. Commissioner Zagir, I see you have a question.
Yeah, this is Commissioner Zagir. Thank you, Ms. Houghton, for that report from the Sonoran Desert Coalition. I was wondering, does your website actually have a map that's highlighted with certain areas that are actually around Tucson that you consider good, like maybe set aside properties that I can access personally?
So the best place to look would be either Map Tucson, which does have a category, and I at this moment I forget exactly what it's called, something about natural areas or something of that shape, or Pima County's Sonoran Desert Conservation Plan maps, where you can then look at some of the conservation areas mapped under the conservation land system. But I'm happy to send you a link after this meeting. Thank you for asking.
Thank you.
At this time, I'd like to go ahead and call Jonathan Salvatierra. Jonathan Salvatierra. Okay, we'll go ahead and come back to Jonathan in at the end, see if he's becomes available. In the meantime, I'd like to go ahead and start with Krista Romero Cárdenas. Me get the mic on that is not on.
Hi, my name is Krista Romero Cárdenas. I am from Tucson, 859 East Water Street, Tucson, Arizona, 85719. I come to you just as a Tucson citizen. Also, starting by saying thank you. This is a ton of work. When I got to work for the county, I did the community health needs assessment, and that was a lot of work, and I just admire everything that you guys are doing. So I'll just start by saying thank you. My background's in business. I have my master's in public health, and I'm currently a doctoral student in natural resource sciences. So why am I saying that? One, I had the opportunity to attend some of the meetings. Very well done. And I guess I'm here to share some insights and what I saw and what I would recommend. And so one, we know that according to the IPCC, like we have less than a decade to make massive changes, not just our environment or natural resources, but in health behavior, right? And I'll tell you that as a student, the more I'm learning, the more nervous I'm getting, especially living in an arid land in a place like Tucson. So yes, I guess my questions are in regards to when I was reading them. So you have climate change policies and then they're numbered, which is excellent. I just saw that it was mentioned that some of these goals are outlined or connected with actual functional plans. So I'll get to that because I couldn't find that in the plan. So when you read the plan, it reads as all these fantastic goals. They're very broad. Some are a little more niche, but again, I think it'd be really helpful, not just for the plan, but also moving forward as we are referencing it. Let's make it as easy as possible to make these types of decisions. And if I'm wrong, please correct me and I apologize. So really quick for climate change rule number one, it says we use a variety of strategies to ensure all residents benefit from initiatives and sustainability. Again, I would just want to paint a picture of how broad these things are. Four, collect regional and local data. I would challenge us to think about, are we going to be collecting this quarterly? Where will it be collected and how will it be collected and how will it be implemented, right? Because we're growing really quickly. For number 12, in developing codes and policies, I would almost recommend that instead of developing new ones, we should modify the ones we have. So we've had codes, as you mentioned, they're very specific. Let's start modifying them to actually shape the next 10 years, actually to shape now. We have to shape it now. Also for climate change number 15, so promoting design and buildings. We have CAPLO. I had the opportunity to work on and investigate the infill incentive district. We can build certain codes and policies to say, hey, if you're going to use this land, you need to set aside 20% of this for public green space or something to not just mitigate urban heat island, but also let's make Tucson a place where companies and where we want to live, not just after 10, 20 years. A lot of the land use agreements that we're seeing at the state with AMAs and also with the cap and how we're managing our water, I'm really concerned with how I don't think we're monitoring enough. I know we're trying, but when I say big corporations, they have much more capital to be digging larger wells or have different accesses to water that our residents don't use that much. So can we maybe offset as new corporations are coming in saying, hey, for our rainy day fund, since we might not have FEMA or other federal agencies and supports, what can we do as a city and as a state specifically here in our city to protect ourselves for these types of incidents? Just because I know I don't have a lot of time, I guess I want to share just a quick success story and remind everyone that remember when California made that policy that we had to change like all of our household items to be more energy efficient? And then the entire markets trended and moved in that direction. And that completely changed the way we do things. I think that we have the potential as Tucson to do those things.
Thank you,
So
Ms. Romero Cárdenas, for
thank
the
you. Thank you for your
performance.
time. I'll hold for any questions.
Hearing none.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next up, I'd like to call Brendan Lyons.
Good evening, Chair and members of the Commission. My name is Brendan Lyons. I serve as the Government Affairs Director for the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association. I reside at 1562 West Don Drive, Tucson, Arizona, 85704. I'd like to begin by acknowledging Cesar and his team. I attended many of the stakeholder meetings. In fact, invited Cesar to come out to our technical committee meeting to discuss Plan Tucson and many of its objectives. I'd like to acknowledge the city's efforts to incorporate equity, sustainability, and inclusiveness into its long-range planning. These are important values, but to truly move the needle, the plan must also address Tucson's urgent housing supply crisis and long-term economic realities. We're encouraged by the several revisions, specifically support for infill and mixed-use housing, flexibility, and infrastructure funding, and a commitment to review land use regulations. These are meaningful steps forward. I'd be remiss if I didn't say that we support an all-in approach, very diverse housing, you know, not just focus on single-family residences, but anything to obtain attainable housing. We're encouraged by several of the revisions, as noted. However, the plan still lacks explicit strategies to streamline permitting, shorten review timelines, or support developers navigating regulatory complexities. Just as concerning, there's no discussion of economic feasibility. Despite rising interest rates, construction costs, and limited capital access that are slowing housing production across our community, it merely addresses COVID and the housing crash. To make this plan actionable, we recommend aligning infrastructure investment with growth areas, pre-entitling public land use for housing, and incentivizing rather than mandating sustainable measures that could raise housing costs. SABA respectfully urges the Commission to go further in reducing barriers to development and enabling housing affordability through practical, flexible, and collaborative solutions. We stand ready to work further on addressing some of these items, and we thank you for your time and consideration. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lyons. Next up, Stephen Brigham.
Thank you. I'm Stephen Brigham, retired architect and planner, and currently serving as a planning advisor for the Rito Bend neighborhood. I reside at 3754 North Camino Lea Maria. The previous comments regarding underground utilities are timely and part of what I want to reinforce tonight. I last testified at the March 12th Zoom meeting at Ward 2, trying to stress the importance of aesthetics and collaborative planning, particularly for transportation and utilities. I thought it might be helpful tonight to show some examples, and I think the commissioners have copies of this. So I don't know the best way to do this, but I can hold these up or you can look at them later. But these are examples of planning that doesn't work and the importance of engaging neighborhoods early on so that we're not just waking up one day and finding a whole bunch of stuff in our backyards. And the mention to Country Club was real important and timely. These things just show up. The Rito Bend neighborhood was a former Pima County rural and artistic neighborhood directly north of Winter Haven Historic District. It had a strong artistic heritage, is a legendary home of renowned artists such as Maynard Dixon, De Grazia, and Linda Ronstadt, just to name a few. So it is an important neighborhood, not just because I live there, but because it's part of Tucson's heritage. That neighborhood was annexed in the 1970s. So here we are 50 years later, dealing with incomplete streets, streets that have been widened with bleak landscapes, and then more recently, these enormous poles that show up. So it's not always about undergrounding utilities. It's about having a voice as to where some of these things go. And as you can tell from some of these posters that I created, took pictures of along Prince Road, these things get in the way of us trying to do volunteer projects, because we know a lot of street widening projects and street improvement projects are years in the making. So I'm here to encourage and reinforce the importance of Plan Tucson as our document to address the future. I'm encouraged by many of the policies and goals that you have in there, particularly, it was mentioned, Chapter 4, Guideline A24, which talks about the importance of dealing with the aesthetics of above-ground utilities and trying to do underground utilities where possible. But what it doesn't include are the realities and challenges of the nearly 500 neighborhoods in this city that are waking up to these things. You know, while our visitors come here to enjoy the Sonoran Desert environment, what they don't enjoy is driving around Tucson to some of these neighborhoods that are really struggling. The streetscapes, the right-of-ways, these are not representing the beauty of our Sonoran Desert or the beauty of our city. So I'm going to recommend three quick things. The document is a complex document. I really appreciated the structure that you laid out, but I want to encourage you to put very close to the beginning of the document to reinforce the value of aesthetics, collaborative planning, which means engaging the neighborhoods, existing neighborhoods, so that they know what's going on, and then neighborhood revitalization. Secondly, the document has some wonderful illustrations.
Thank you, Mr. Brigham. Your 4 minutes is up.
All right. Just include some images of the reality of what we're facing. Any questions? Thank you for the opportunity. Sorry it took so long.
Thank you. Next up, I'd like to call John Schwartz.
Schwartz.
I'm not the only Schwartz here today, apparently. My name is John Schwartz. I live on North Camino Lea Maria, 5716. I'm on the steering committee of the Tucson Neighborhood Undergrounding Coalition that represents neighborhoods containing about 25,000 Tucsonans. I want to first acknowledge the tremendous work that you guys have done. I look at a lot of documents. I'm very impressed with what you all have accomplished here. But it isn't perfect. And I have some suggestions. Perhaps you all will figure out better ways of doing it than what I'm about to suggest. I do think that a very important goal in Tucson should have to do with the aesthetics of the community. I don't think I'm alone in feeling that aesthetics are very, very important. Yet they are nowhere mentioned in goals of the Tucson plan, Plan Tucson. I also know from interactions with city officials, with attorneys, with the zoning examiners process, et cetera, that repeating things several times in the plan oftentimes magnifies the strength of the actual desire that the plan has. So I'm going to suggest amending two of the goals, and also suggesting some policies. We suggest revising the title of Goal 13 to expand access to high quality transportation choices, enhance safety and aesthetics, and improve the condition of city streets and other infrastructure. That's the goal on transportation that adds the word aesthetics into it. And with regard to goal 14, which has to do with land use planning, to do basically the same thing, ensure comprehensive and inclusive land use planning for a well-designed, aesthetic, vibrant community. We also suggest adding a new policy in goal 13, placed as the second goal, quote, develop policies and procedures that are designed to protect and enhance the aesthetic attractiveness of Tucson's streetscapes along the arterials and collectors and within our neighborhoods. And I would place a very similar recommendation for a new policy in goal 14 that might be a policy 14. And finally, with regard to policy 13 in land use section, to add the words minimizes their aesthetic intrusion when it talks about utility construction. So as I say, you may have better ways of bringing the aesthetics of the community into Plan Tucson. Once again, I'd like to just acknowledge the quality of the work that you've done and thank you on behalf of all the members of our coalition. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your comments. I see a question from Commissioner Zagier.
Hi, this is Commissioner Zagier. I'm going to request, I didn't get my hand up soon enough, but the last two speakers, Mr. Brigham and Mr. Schwartz, I don't know if you sent in any written comments to the Planning Commission, but I'd be interested in reading your completed fuller statements if you could send that into the commissioner's website. I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
You may have, in some manner, I'm not sure how, received these this document, which speaks to the different recommendations that we make, the suggestions that we make for amending Plan Tucson. I think you may have received that in an email, in your email, just within the last hour.
Okay, then I didn't have a chance to look at the latest postings. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Okay. Next up, I'd like to call Will LeBird. Will L. Bird. Did I get that name correct? Will L. Bird. Okay, we'll come back to you. Carter Weeks. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Carter Weeks, and I live at 41 South Shannon Road, 85745. Speaking from the perspective of a young person, things are particularly difficult in Tucson at the moment, especially in regards to housing, as well as the state of education. Their rent is getting increasingly unaffordable. There are no homes in a price range where my generation will ever be able to afford them. And I think that it is crucially important that we take steps to build more affordable housing to put a downward market pressure so that housing prices go down, rents go down, and things reach an affordable state where we can live on entry-level salaries. Additionally, when it comes to education, things are very up in the air right now, especially with the Department of Education potentially being gutted by the current administration. And I believe that would be important to add into the plan details on how you will support students, both pre or K through 12, as well as before kindergarten, because we already have extraordinarily low high school graduation rates, and things are only going to get worse from here if we don't immediately start taking action. Additionally, if we're able to start bringing down housing prices and we'll be able to build stronger families units, which will help to support students as they go through their education. Parents will have to work less. They'll be able to make sure that food is being put on the table. And hopefully we can see a reduction in child poverty as well as people leaving poverty as they grow up. And that's about all.
Thank you, sir. Next up, I have Kevin Stort Trout.
Good evening. My name is Kevin Strout. I reside at 41 South Shannon Road, 4104. I am here representing myself as a longtime citizen of Tucson and as someone who has been a bike commuter for several years. I want to start by saying, hold on, let me get my notes, that I wholeheartedly agree with the overall goals of Plan Tucson, and it is yeah, I think it's excellent that the city is pursuing these goals. And so the criticisms that I have with it are just in the most effective way that I believe these goals can be implemented and what can be stressed. Starting with, as a bike commuter, one of the greatest challenges that I have faced when trying to get around Tucson, and this works both for biking and for pedestrian access, is connectivity. Mainly that you can have, you know, different parcels of good bikeable and walkable areas of town, but if those areas do not connect, if you cannot plan a route that goes from A to B and doesn't leave, you know, good bikeable infrastructure, it doesn't really matter. And there's some points on this, like Transportation 4 does, you know, mention the word connectivity. I'd just like to see higher emphasis on it, and I do have a couple just of, you know, like focus points in the city, and you can make many more of these. But for example, there is a unprotected blind turn on Star Pass Road next to the intersection with South Mission. Star Pass Road has an excellent protected bicycle section. However, if you're traveling westbound from that, it doesn't really matter because to get there, you need to do an extremely dangerous turn where you don't have protection and you are next to a concrete wall around a blind corner. And so because of that dangerous turn, you don't really get any of the benefits of the protected bike lane past that. You know, additionally, and I realize the city doesn't have, you know, absolute power to change this, but it is somewhat ridiculous that the Diamond Street the Diamond Street Loop, which is a major bike thoroughfare throughout all of Tucson, goes right next to the Tucson Mall, a major commercial center, and does not connect to it, despite the fact that they are right next to each other. And you literally just need to convince them all to get rid of a hedge and you'd be able to bike directly in. But instead, there's no way to access it without crossing a major road. Just in general, when it comes to transportation and bikeability, a chain is only as strong as its weakest link, and I'd like to see stronger language directed at that. Another thing that I wanted to look at was the future growth scenario map, which overall I think does an extremely good job at emphasizing the correct things for the development of Tucson. But there's a few nitpicks I have. The main one is that I was disappointed to see that there was no emphasis on discouraging private vehicle use in the downtown. Instead, you know, the plan, despite discouraging private vehicle use in some of the other blocks, seems to act like the downtown can, you know, accommodate all forms of transportation in their greatest form. Realistically, that's just not going to happen. The Tucson downtown is already busy, and we really should be de-emphasizing private vehicle use and encouraging walkability, bikeability, and transit connections to downtown instead. Somewhat related to that, when looking at the neighborhood blocks and the recommendations for what that would mean for like zoning, I noticed that it only recommends R2 and R3 near arterials and collectors, which is a very car-centric way of imagining how that sort of development could be. It'd be nice to see some language which encourage more R2 and R3 away from arterials and collectors in cases where you have like walkable or bikeable neighborhoods. How am I on time? Okay, and then the last point is that I was somewhat disappointed to see. While I'm very encouraged to see the plans for the BRT on Stone and other large-scale transportation improvements, I was somewhat discouraged to see that Tucson, after creating the streetcar, the Sunlink streetcar in 2014, has abandoned.
Thank you, Mr. Stroud. Your
thank performance you.
Is up. Next up, I have Sam Miller.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and commissioners. My name is Sam Miller, 5049 East Broadway, 85711. I am the vice chair of the board of directors of our Dark Sky International Southern Arizona chapter. And I'm also a dark sky advocate. Along with 2,200 of my colleagues worldwide, our purpose is to protect the night sky, our astronomy industry, and the natural world. And as you know, we're headquartered right here in Tucson. Quite some time ago, we took note of the public outreach your planners were conducting and offered to contribute in just about any way we could. Our first few meetings were an education for us, specifically on the breadth and depth of work that the planning staff had charted. We also had to do some homework. We had to do some backpedaling and study the 2013 plan to look for voids and growth required improvements. We found the group of planners to be exceptionally good listeners, but also disciplined interviewers to clarify our message beyond our normal technical frame of reference. They asked for examples and why our concepts were important to Tucson residents. We offered text to explain light pollution and the effects of on our astronomy industry and the natural world, we humans included. They expertly considered our concepts, and some of that material has woven its way into the plan's preamble text and also the goals. We also commented on topics that were out of our field, and for scientists to speak on out of our field issues is somewhat dangerous. However, those comments were based on things we asked to for more clarification, and true to form, they welcomed those comments and were very patient with us. Although there is text in the document that speaks to the outdoor lighting code and compliance with that, the point that we would like to make and see, although it may not be a planned Tucson function and more on the city, is greater enforcement. We know enforcement is always a weak link in some of government, but enforcement is the way to make that happen. So we would like to see that emphasized. As we read this draft, we find it to be detailed, comprehensive, but very readable. And it really does provide a guidance-oriented approach to our city's future. The document provides a narrative of our city's history, where we are now, and where we need to go. So we agree that it is pretty well written, and our kudos to these folks. There is a statement in the front of the document, and no need to read it here, but it's essentially a thank you to all of those who participated in all of the meetings. Cesar went through and pointed that out expertly earlier, but this was a huge project. And I want to point out that it's our belief that they are not the authors of this document. They are good listeners, organizers, and writers who captured the real authors' messages. Overall, we think it's very nicely done. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'd like to go ahead and take a minute to say that we have noted people online who have their hands raised, and if people online want to speak, please raise your hands and I will note you and we'll call you once we're done with the list here. Next up, I have Siavish Habibi.
Good evening. My name is Siavash Habibi. I live at 202 East 12th Street. I'm a master's student in the urban planning program at the University of Arizona. And I'm here today to share insights from the recent community engagement regarding the first draft of Plan Tucson at the College of Architecture and Planning, CAPLA, at U of A. In December 2024, the College of Architecture and Planning, along with the Planning and Development Services Department and Southwest Decision Resources SDR, hosted the first session of the Meeting in the Box workshops at our college as part of the community engagement session for the Plan Tucson draft. The students enrolled in the public participation and dispute resolution course were instructed by the planning department and SDR on how to manage and facilitate the workshop for other students of CAPLA as the first participants of this workshop. Prior to the meeting, the students were given a list of the goals of the plan so they could pick their desired goals to go over with in the event. These goals were then shared with PTSD and SDR to help them prepare the essential materials. CAPLA's social media pages notified students 2 weeks prior to the event, and on the day of the event, members of the Graduate Planning Society group conducted in-person invitations to bring other students present at CAPLA. The facilitators of this event were the students enrolled in Dr. Lat Keith's public engagement course. This workshop was part of our class activity to gain hands-on experience and learn more about managing and facilitating public engagement programs as one of the most important areas of urban planning. The workshop started by dividing participants into three groups, each working on the pre-selected goals from Plan Tucson plus the future growth scenario map. Each team included 4 to 5 participants, 2 facilitators, and 1 note taker to document the progress. Participants were each given a booklet of the goal, which included the narrative, purpose, and aims and policies, and then 5 to 10 minutes to read it over. Then the facilitator started by asking each participant about their opinion of the goal, what they think need to be changed or added or replaced in the goal. Facilitators tried to keep a conversation between the participants and help them by summarizing their thoughts and connecting them to related planning areas. The process was straightforward and transparent. Each participant could contribute openly, and facilitators gave everyone a fair share of time and space to communicate and engage in the conversation. The notes documented by the note takers were later shared with SCR and planning department to add to their public notes for the plan draft. As urban planning students, having this opportunity to start the Meeting the Box workshop brought us an insightful learning experience. And having hands-on experience facilitating public engagement programs in real-world scenarios reminded us the importance of hearing what the community and the city thinks and wants for the future of the city. At the end, I want to thank Dr. Lat Keith, the course instructor, for coordinating with the planning department and SCR, Cesar Acosta and Amanda Smith from the planning department, for giving us the opportunity to be part of this process and preparing the materials, also for the great work and effort for preparing the plan, and Colleen Whitaker from Southwest Decision Resources for sharing her experience on how to successfully manage and facilitate the meeting. Thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Mr. Habibi. Next up, I'd like to call Libby Eshbo.
Good evening. Thank you all for being here, and thank you to the Planning Committee for all your hard work and time that you have put into this. My name is Libby Eshbo. My legal name is Edith, if you have to look me up. Edith Eshbo. I live at 767 West Paris Promenade, 85705. I'm president of the Neighborhood Association for Miracle Manor Neighborhood, and I would like to invite someone from the Planning Commission to attend one of our Neighborhood Association meetings to speak about kind of in a general way of what you all are thinking about. Miracle Manor Neighborhood is Grant, Oracle, Miracle Manor, Miracle Mile, and the interstate, basically almost to the interstate, not quite. So about 400 addresses are in that area, businesses and residents as well. So I'll just put that invitation out there. And thank you so much again for being here.
Thank you very much.
Oh, and I also speak on behalf of my neighbor, Lisa Bravo, which I put her on there as well.
So just for confirmation, Lisa Bravo is not here? Or she is here. She's next up. No.
She spoke for both.
I spoke for both.
Got it. Understood. Thank you. Okay. Next up, I have Michael Borger.
Hello, my name is Michael Borger, and I'm a resident of 2220 East 19th Street, 85719. I'm really grateful that I'm not the first to bring up my point today, which is cycling thoroughfares and connectivity. Plan Tucson has an opportunity to really push forward ways that we can connect our linear routes for cycling. The issue that is faced is places like Elkhorn Mall, Park Place Mall, Randolph Golf Complex. These are huge blocks of fenced off areas that just completely, they drive cyclists to unsafe roads to get around them, when there's plenty of space to just, you know, ride through or create a bikeway through there. So as part of the way that it can be incorporated into the plan is that Tucson is home to a major cycling race. It's kind of part of our identity, and it can be part of our identity going forward into the future as well. Many cities are embracing cycling to the point where it's becoming a part of their identity, like Paris. And this is a climate, probably the number one climate solution that we are all able to make immediately when it's required. Encouraging cycling thoroughfares is really important to me. As well as I believe fare free transit should become a part of our identity as a city and can be pushed in Plan Tucson as a specific policy to make permanent. Regarding utilities, not all city residents place a priority on undergrounding utilities if it costs us money or if it prevents us from building clean energy infrastructure. So those are the saving money and building clean energy infrastructure are the top priorities. I don't think aesthetics should be prioritized. And I know that goes against some of the organizations here, but I just want to make sure it's not viewed as something that is a universal priority. And finally, with the airports, the fact that we are getting rid of a potential neighborhood area just because there's flights over the area is not very forward thinking. I think what we should be doing instead is reducing flights and preserving neighborhoods. And that goes for Davis-Monthan as well. And we could be redirecting air traffic to the south instead of towards our population center. And so that's something that could be reconsidered on this revised draft, is getting rid of a potential money-making neighborhood center, revenue-generating neighborhood center, in favor of just letting pollution drop on our city. So thank you for your consideration. And are there any questions? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to go ahead and apologize in advance for how I'm going to butcher this name, but Robert Roll Koch? Robert.
Would it be Bulacek?
That's a B, Bulacek. Sorry about that.
Sorry about that. I'm much better with a keyboard. Robert Bulacek, I'm a resident of Ward 3. I am an energy efficiency consultant and frequent activist pestering the city council and the corporation commission and the legislature. I think I can provide some information that will be helpful about understanding the issues about undergrounding in the Campbell Corridor. One of the basic issues is that while TEP would like to do some undergrounding, and the city and residents would like to do some undergrounding, the Arizona Corporation Commission has basically said that TEP is not allowed to rate base any expense greater than the minimum necessary for running a power line. And since undergrounding is considerably more expensive than running overhead lines, TEP is unwilling to use investor money to do that kind of work. And the Corporation Commission has basically said you can't use ratepayer money for that additional expense. The city tried to do a deal in the last franchise agreement to provide some money for that kind of work that failed at the election. And so I think the essential thing is that we need changes at the Corporation Commission if we're going to be able to fund undergrounding projects. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, sir. Okay. I believe that terminates our list. If anybody from the audience would like to speak related to the purpose and update of City Tucson Shadow Plan, you may do so at this time. If you want to raise your hand.
Good evening, Mr. Chairman, members of the commission. You have to excuse me. Allergies have gotten to me. My name is William Vasco. I live at 2034 West Calle del Reposo, Tucson, Arizona, and that's in Ward 1. Full disclosure, I was a city employee for 32 years and the planning director for 20 of those years. So with that context, I'd like to say a few words about Plan Tucson in the sense that I think it's a milestone document and to provide some context to what I mean is that a half century ago, Tucson prepared the first comprehensive plan that went beyond just land use and subdivision codes. It was a comprehensive plan that dealt with the environment, housing, governance, services, archaeology, history. In other words, the broad number of elements that you have in plan Tucson 2025. It was adopted after 4 years of intense debate. This room was full of people who were not happy with it over those 4 years, but ultimately it was adopted. And what was important was that it was a comprehensive plan dealing with all the issues that you've heard and addressed by tonight's speakers. The second milestone was in 2001. And that's when the city of Tucson, conformed with state statutes, adopted a new comprehensive plan that had been amended over the preceding years and submitted it to the voters for their consideration. And it was adopted in 2001. The next milestone is the one you're dealing with tonight, and that is 2013. When the current plan was adopted, three steps. The fourth step is Plan Tucson 2025. I think it is an impressive document. Its preparation, its detail, the breadth of what it covers is absolutely amazing. And it's continued some traditions that have extended over the last half century. One is citizen participation. The process that was used was in step with the tradition that had been established all those years with the other plans. Staff did an outstanding job with citizen participation and continued that. The second point I'd like to make is how broad it covers the topics that it covers. It's a valuable tool, not only for existing residents, developers, people coming into Tucson. It has a great wealth of background and knowledge about Tucson. It considers citizen participation as a key element. It also incorporates the idea that neighborhood area and specific plans are important tradition in Tucson, and that it will be a tradition that will be proposed in the coming years once this plan is adopted. The plan has done a marvelous job in covering open space, connected open space systems. It has a map in that draft that I think should be tied to the future growth scenario maps. It's figure 3.9, and it covers the connections to the National Forest, Tucson Mountain Park, and all of the other environmental areas. I think it's important that the plan identify those particular sites.
I'll let you finish your thought. Thank you.
Okay. I have some additional comments, which I will provide to staff. But basically, I'm asking that once you've considered all the considerations from the commission that you've heard at the hearing, that you move the document forward for adoption to the mayor and council. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Is there anyone else in person? I see one coming up.
Hi, everyone. My name is Melina Beas-Campo. I reside 6280 South Campbell Avenue. I'm the enrollment specialist for COPE Behavioral Health. And so my main concern right now is I do approximately 60 to 80 enrollments a day. And there's a housing crisis right now. I have seniors afraid. I have veterans afraid. And I have the SMI community very afraid. I'm noticing that a pattern in the drug usage comes to the homeless, to the housing crisis. A lot of these people get discouraged during the process of getting housing that they relapse because they're out there in the street. So I just really encourage, you know, the committee to focus on the housing. It's really important right now. I'm seeing and hearing a lot of our elders are disabled. They receive a check that's $1,200. Now, if rent is in the thousands, that's leaving them $200 to pay for deductibles, food, expenses. This is not what we want the last of their life to really look like, honestly. Another thing that I recommend the future for Tucson is we've been hearing very horrific cases recently. And as a mother, I am afraid because I have two daughters. I've heard of Isabel Salas. I've heard about Maribel Gonzalez. And now I've heard about Emily Pike. I don't know if we can use more advanced technology to monitor our deserts or our city, because the person accused of these horrific crimes has not been kept criminally prosecuted. And so I wonder, you know, when we plan Tucson, is there something that we can do to make sure that the deserts are being safe from criminal activity? That's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Chair, Commissioners. For the record, Stephen Eddy on behalf of Tucson Electric Power, 88 East Broadway. Thank you for the opportunity to address the commission this evening. And I will echo the praise that prior speakers have brought forward to staff and commissioners with respect to this plan. I will state that as former chair of the commission back in the 2015 update, I recognize and appreciate the hard work that staff and the commissioners do to make sure that this is a successful document for the future of Tucson. I did provide a comment on record with respect to some of the concerns that we have with one of the policy statements that's currently drafted in Plan Tucson. We respectfully acknowledge the policy statement around undergrounding, but do respectfully request that we do that the commission consider modifying some of the language within that statement. Specifically, where possible, being changed to where appropriate, and then also adding and cost effective. As one of the prior speakers had mentioned, we do our rates are approved by the Arizona Corporation Commission. These costs, whether it's undergrounding other investments that we make as part of your local utility, those are borne by our customers, and we want to be cost sensitive to the investments that we make and respectfully request that cost is added to the policy statement. With that, again, appreciate the time and commitment of you all for this this update. Happy to take any questions, but again, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Is there anyone else from the audience this evening that would like to speak?
Can we answer some of these allegations?
No, this will go on to the public on the online format right now. If there's still more time after the fact, I think we can come back to it, but we'll hit the online audience right now. I had Katie Brown was the first hand I saw online.
Hello. Yes, my name is Katie Brown, and I did submit a request to speak to open audience tonight. I'm not sure if it went through to you. I am speaking tonight as a private citizen, a longtime resident of Tucson. I live at 4357 East Monte Vista Drive in Tucson, 85712. I am a member of several environmental and sustainability groups in Tucson. I'm an active member of our neighborhood association, Vista Del Monte, and I am a new, for complete disclosure, I am a new member of the Commission on Climate, Energy, and Sustainability, though tonight I am speaking as an individual. I have been involved in some of the public opportunities to pitch in to Plan Tucson, as well as some of the past plans like Livable Tucson. I love to see the public participation and take advantage of that. I am very aware that it does need to come before the voters, and listening to comments today about the benefits of the plan, but yet it's not specific enough. People are giving a lot of comments that this, I've heard the general policy aspect of Plan Tucson don't necessarily cover. And so my comment is this, that I would really think that Plan Tucson would benefit from some sort of a crosswalk between the general policy and goals that are very valuable in Plan Tucson, and then the more specific policies and programs that the city of Tucson has to carry out these goals. There could be a hyperlinks or a policy crosswalk to, for example, Tucson Resilient Together or Zero Waste Roadmap. Some of these other programs that the city of Tucson have been developed specifically to address goals in the Plan Tucson, but people don't know that if they're not specifically mentioned or linked. It should be easy to do and not something that somebody has to hunt up. The other thing that I think would be valuable, you can tell I've heard the urgency in people's voices. I've heard about climate and also biking and housing, education, and I think it would be really valuable for the city. I know they already do it, but to have some sort of a yearly check-in on the goals, What's the progress made towards which goals? Which goals did they work on this year, and what percentage towards, achieving that goal do they think they made? I've seen similar things. I think it would not be hard to attach. So those would be my recommendations for the plan, to really make it readable and encourage voters to realize how these general policies are specifically addressed by the city of Tucson. Thank you. Any questions?
Looks like we do have one from Commissioner Zagir. Thank you.
Hi, this is Commissioner Zagir. Thank you for that. I remember at a previous commission meeting, we asked if they would provide links to the functional plans. I think there's 14 of them. You mentioned one. And I did notice throughout the document, I thought that the newest document actually had a link in a lot of places. Maybe there needs to be more links to guide people when they're reading the document to go look at the functional plan in specific areas of Plan Tucson, but maybe someone from TDSD can maybe clarify that. Thank you.
Thank you for that comment and that reaffirmation of the need. If I missed it, it may not have been in a prior, what do you call it, involvement that I saw. A crosswalk someplace where there is a grid also would, with the goals and then the plan, might also help.
Good idea.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Next up, I had Ricky Riojas.
I think I'm not muted yet.
Yeah. Sorry, it wasn't allowing me to mute. Hi, my name is Ricky Riojas. I'll turn my camera on for a second. I've been involved in this process for quite a while, and I would just like to say thank you to all of the planners, all of the city staff that participated on this project. At the time when this was starting and up until recently, I was on the Tucson-Pima County Historical Commission. I have since stepped down. And I'm not speaking for them, but it was wonderful to get that experience to have the Historical Commission reached out to and involved, and our feedback got taken and considered seriously. And this is like the first time we're really seeing the city of Tucson incorporate historical preservation throughout the entirety of the document to make sure that both the tangible historical resources and the intangible historical resources are being preserved. And it was wonderful to have that experience. I think it sets a new bar for the city of Tucson in terms of their public participation, because it really felt like at every step of the process, and even now, you could just reach out to the staff at any time and ask them questions for why the general plan had this and what you think it should have. And they were always very honest about why things were included and why things weren't. And I think that really helped my understanding of what a general plan serves to be, which is an overarching guiding document and not very specific policies. Like, it's up to us to pressure mayor and council to initiate those very specific policies on like a by policy level. And I think that really helped my greater understanding within Tucson. I made involvement in the political sphere much more accessible in a way that I think I never realized I didn't have before until they really showed their commitment towards community and being there at the times and places when people needed to be. That was all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, the next hand I see is W's phone. W's iPhone, I'm sorry.
My name is William Craig. I live at 2043 East 3rd Street. I'm just like would just like to let the Planning Commission know that at this point, the company that bought TEP knew the ordinances and the university plan before they signed on. And now they're asking to change the rules. Please don't let it happen. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to open up for another opportunity for anybody online or in person to speak. I will say that I'm not going to turn this into a debate, so you had your 4 minutes, sir. Thank you. Commissioners, is there any other questions that you have?
I do have one. So a few people have mentioned this, and this is something I've brought up a few times, specific action items in the plan. I looked through 10 other general plans, I think 8 of them, maybe 9 of them, specific action items, specific departmental requirements and timelines and funding. I actually looked up what the APA, the American Planning Association, considers best practice for comp plans. That's included in that as well. So I guess the question I have is, if we were to compile all of the action items from all of these secondary plans, is that something we could review yearly? Is that something that could be added as an appendix to the general plan? How does that work?
Certainly an idea to look at if we could compile all of the existing action items from the functional plans. So just from our earlier comment, I invite anyone who's curious to look at page 224 of Chapter 5 Implementations, where we start the list of all of the different functional plans. There are about 22 functional plans that the city has in operation. And of the 10 or so general plans across the city that may, or across the state of Arizona that we have looked at, I know that we are unique in that many of we have a great deal more functional plans than a lot of others. So if it's possible for us to gather up all of the action items of these, like I know there's that's probably several hundred, possibly even 1,000 action items. It's something that we could potentially put in for our webpage. So I do know that a goal of ours is that in addition to the print version of the document, after Mayor and Council gives us approval for a final draft, we want to start beginning the process of implementing a web version. So it'll be on a ArcGIS hub page, which will be able to be interactive, a lot more functionality as far as the zooming in and outside of maps, but also allows us to link into all the different functional plans the city has. So that's one opportunity we have to be able to think about how to get people more quickly to the different functional and action items that they have. Currently in the print version, if you look at the end of each goal, there is a big old blue box which has the implementation spotlight that lists the functional plans specific to each of those goals. We want to make sure to highlight that as a way to see which of the functional plans will speak to the policies of those goals. But we will think critically about how we can make that a little more, make that more clear, make that more striking, and maybe a new appendix is a way to do that. But I think that was one thing that we noticed is just that action items, specific metrics are found a lot of times in our plans that have a 3 to 5 year time period. And we didn't want to create contradictory guidance or reinvent the wheel with those. We wanted to link people to those. So finding ways that we can have that language written into the general plan as maybe an appendix or just a link to is something that we can work on.
So I think that actually works perfectly. And going beyond adding it as an appendix, it seems like a pretty big undertaking, right? Maybe it's something that instead of adding it as an appendix to the general plan, it's something that is compiled, made available to the public, for one, but then also something that we could have a report on here at the Planning Commission, maybe yearly, just to see what the progress is on each of the action items, what programs are being completed.
Yes, actually, one of the comments from the March 12th public hearing was to make sure that we have an action plan or have an annual report included. So that is language that is going to be added as part of the final draft or the May draft of the general plan is that we are going to talk about the annual report process. So that's being incorporated as something that we'll be doing.
Perfect. Thanks.
I saw Commissioner Zagir's hand up earlier. Wanted to give her opportunity if she still had a question. This is
just one thing. I have my closed caption on because a lot of times when you guys are speaking up there, you can hear yourself clearly there. But if you're online like I am, your voices can get very muted. Or if you turn your face away from the microphone, it's hard to hear you. That's why I can actually read what you're saying to actually understand what you're saying. So it was that was just a minor thing I had my hand up for, but thank you.
Mr. Chair, one other, and this is another thing too, going back into something that maybe could be added at some point in the near future. So there's no specific section that calls out administrative actions. So other general plans that I looked at, there are some ministerial almost actions that are undertaken administratively. So correction of errors, correction of references and page numbers, change in formatting, addition of reference plans, if there's any change mandated by state law, and then revisions to any companion action plan. That's from the city of Mesa's general plan, I think it is, a specific section about what happens if there's a change at the state level. So how do we update the plan without actually amending it if there's an administrative action that can be undertaken? I think that would be probably a beneficial, small addition to the document.
That seems feasible. Thank you. And I know that we have that might be something we can incorporate. And the last two pages of actually implementation chapter is about major minor amendments, which talks about administrative process. So maybe that's something that we can incorporate there.
Commissioner Guinea.
Thank you. I have a question about the CCT and how it applies. In how the general plan applies to the CCT and area plan, the neighborhood plans and specific plans in general apply. So, looking at the future growth scenario map, it would seem, a lot of the color blobs cover corridors, but not all of them. So the CCT covers more area than is what is shown on the future growth scenario map. So it seems feasible to me that something would be developed under the CCT in an area that might not conform with this future growth scenario map or with an area plan map, if it's in an area plan. Am I incorrect about that?
Commissioner Kinney, members of the commission. So, I will note that the community corridors tool largely applied to commercial and office districts and districts that are multifamily. And I think that generally corresponds with where you see mixed-use districts shown on the future growth scenario map. There are portions of our corridors that are zoned for lower density residential. And I think those might be the areas you're referring to, Commissioner Kinney, where on the future growth map, they're probably shown as existing neighborhoods. And the community corridors tool does have some opportunities for redevelopment of those sites with slightly higher density residential. But the intent there in those R1 and R2 parcels is that you can do some smaller lots, single family townhouses, but housing that generally fits within the context of a neighborhood. Within our existing neighborhood land use policies, and Setzer can fill in more detail on this than I, but there is actually quite a bit of room there, even in the existing neighborhoods, per the general plan policy for infill that is contextually appropriate in lower density neighborhoods. So I would say that's probably how the community corridor tool would impact some of those areas that might be out of the mixed use centers on the corridors.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to say also, I'm totally in support of Commissioner Lampo's comments about getting updates and about being able to make some minor changes administratively, scrivener's errors and things due to state law. I think that makes a lot of sense. And there probably is a way to do that already, but maybe we should just put it in there. I would also, in the kind of theme of encouraging housing development and wanting the kind of development that we've put out in the universe that we say we want, that I don't think it's a bad idea to put a policy goal in here, maybe in Chapter 4 under the Guidelines for Development Review about streamlining permitting processes and timelines. Not to say that, it's just timelines. Things still have to meet all the code requirements, I think it is just a good aspiration to put in here that we will streamline permitting and review process timelines. So thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Kinney. And just to let you know, in the land use policies, I'm struggling to find the exact wording. We do have language talking about encouraging moderate to high density mixed use development and talking about reducing restrictions to allow for more flexibility in development. So in the land use policy, we definitely talk to that as well.
Commissioner Lane.
I also just want to add on to this comment. I read through the letter sent by SABA and also by TAR, and those changes that they suggest seem minor in nature, but add specificity to the document in a way that would help at a logistics level with the city. I also would add on top of that that I think it's important for the city's review processes to differentiate between small and large scale developers and the types of support that they offer to those two groups. Both take part in a different nature of contributing to housing shortages, and you know, review timelines is an important feature to affordability for people doing those kinds of projects. Also, support from the city staff is really important. Some of us have the benefit of having worked here for a long time and know people, but many, many folks who might be homeowners don't know who to call and seem to have an access problem. So I understand that the plan here, the general plan, is aspirational and a vision document. And I think within the walls of the city and their own operations, it's important to state clearly goals and meet timelines that help development happen. So I would support at least all the changes that I saw in the TAR and SABA documents.
Any further discussion?
One more, Mr. Chair. And actually, this is a good question because a lot of people here have made good points. You're planning on additional public engagement sessions.
Okay. So our intent is from here till May 20th to take the feedback we got from the public hearings and incorporate that into our next draft that we'll present at the Mayor and Council public hearing on May 20th. And in between then, we have a couple of pop-up events and where we'll be out talking to the public and providing general education. Any feedback we get at those, we can also look to incorporate. But the timeline for us to be able to get edits in, to have them ready and on the onboard for Mayor and Council is giving us about 3 weeks, more or less. So that's our timeline to be able to incorporate and receive new data.
So that's exactly my question. If we're recommending approval on this document as presented to us today with specific conditions, and then additional items are added, does that need to go back to us? What happens?
As I understand it, like what we're asking is that you recommend the revised draft with any of the recommendations you have, or with any incorporated feedback that we heard from today, will be brought to Mayor and Council. Is that right?
So if I can suggest, if you do have specific things you want to make sure it gets included in the final draft before adoption, because you all are on a tight timeline, we need to meet with our board members and make sure that they know what changes, right? Or are you going to do that?
So, it would follow the same process as any other item that comes to Planning Commission where you make recommendations, and in your motion, you can add, you know, specific or general recommendations. You know, it could be a specific topic that you want us to add some more language around, and then staff can kind of filter some of what we heard tonight around that topic and add in the appropriate language, or you might have very specific policy edits, but you can include that in your motion, and then that would, we would review that, and then potentially take that revised draft to Mayor and Council. So for example, with the community corridors tool, that's probably the most recent example, Planning Commission in your motion recommended several changes to that amendment. So that was the revised version that we brought to Mayor and Council for their review and adoption. And then they made a few further tweaks even, which we would anticipate with this item as well.
Slightly outside of what I was, if you're taking comments from the public and you receive some that we didn't hear, you know, how are those going to be included in the draft that goes to Mayor and Council? That was the question.
I see. So feedback we receive at this point needs to get to us probably before April 25th. But generally speaking, the comments we received at our public hearings is the primary tool we use to revise any changes that will go to Mayor and Council.
Okay. The time is now. It's been brought to my attention that if anybody's parked in the parking garage, it closes at 8 p.m. So if you are parked there, we can take a quick recess to make sure that you don't get locked in. Looks like no one's parked there. Okay, we'll continue. We can take a motion to close the public hearing, continue discussion, then take any motions after that to recommend approval as well. So I'd go ahead and like to request a motion for closing the public hearing.
Motion to close the public hearing.
Do I hear a second?
Aye.
Okay, motion and a second. All in favor, closing the public hearing, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Do I hear any nays? Hearing none, the public hearing for the general plan update is now closed. Thank you. We can go ahead and continue discussion as the commission and deliberate any motions that we are looking to make now.
I feel like I'm going to butcher this a lot, and I'm just going to do it anyway, but I would make a motion to approve Plan Tucson with the language changes as proposed in the TAR and SABA comments in the letters that we saw submitted tonight.
Additional.
As additional amendments, yes, that's right.
Okay.
Yes.
I do. I support that. I would also add the condition that we be presented yearly with a full list of action items from all the secondary planning documents, and possibly with a report, and that those action items be made available to the public for easy access, either through general plan links or as a website dedicated to specifically that. I don't think it's necessary that it be added as an appendix to the document. It seems like that's just overkill. So that's my addition to that. And then the administrative actions. Can you hear me now? Okay. The administrative actions as described, and so I can read those off again. I mean, I don't want to plagiarize the Mesa general plan, but maybe a condition that additional administrative actions be clarified in the document.
Okay, so I think I have a combined motion.
Yeah.
We'll go ahead and take it as a... So we didn't have a second. We just kind of had a...
tacking on.
Okay, a tag.
Can we make a motion?
I'll second your combined Frankenstein motion.
Yes. Lengthy one.
And now we can have discussion.
We can have discussion on that motion, correct.
Okay, I have a comment to make that isn't really about the motion, but I just wanted to say to the young people who are not here in the audience anymore, but who were here earlier, that some of you are still here, and maybe some of you are online, but this is just the first step in executing what is written in the plan, and the work of making sure that we all follow it as a community happens every single day. So this is a marathon, not a sprint, and this is not your last opportunity to get involved. This is just the start. So this, I'd like to think of Plan Tucson as the floor, not the ceiling.
Okay. Any further discussion on the motion at hand? Seeing none online, none further at the table, go ahead and call this to a vote. I'm going to do a roll call vote. We could get you that for us.
Vice Chair Kenny?
Aye.
Commissioner Lampo?
Aye.
Commissioner Lane?
Aye.
Chair Ortiz Pino?
Aye.
Commissioner Schwartz?
Aye.
Commissioner Walczak?
Aye.
Commissioner Young?
Aye.
And Commissioner Zagier?
Aye.
Thank you.
Okay, the ayes have it. We have a recommendation. Thank you all for all your work and to staff for the presentation and all your dedication to putting this plan together for us.
Are all 400 pages going to be printed in booklets that we all get mailed as voters?
No.
Okay. Good.
No.
I do believe that there isn't actually going to be an argument section for the general plan. It's one of those items that'll be just yes or no, but the information we'll have once we have a final draft approved, our next phase four of the general plan process is voter outreach. So we'll be giving plenty of information, plenty of educational materials on what is in the general plan. And again, we'll be available to just talk to people about it.
Commissioner Zagier.
Commissioner Zagier here. It is a long document. I don't want a printed copy. I can easier to read online, but maybe a copy after it's finalizes maybe available in the reference part of libraries, you know, maybe a couple of main libraries throughout town. That might be helpful for those who do not have a very strong internet connection to download 400 pages. Just a suggestion.
All right. Thank you very much. With that, I'll go ahead and run through the rest of the agenda very quickly. Call for item number 4, PDSC staff announcements.
Commissioners, just a couple announcements. One, as Commissioner Kinney alluded to earlier, the community corridors tool was adopted by Mayor and Council on March 18th. So thank you again for all of your work on that item, your deliberations after that public hearing and the work you did on that item. So it was approved with an additional condition or change by Mayor and Council to add a notification requirement to surrounding property owners. And they also adopted with the additional conditions from Planning Commission. So that was our latest code amendment. We're really excited for that to take effect in about 10 days, I believe. And that's all.
Thank you very much. Next, future agenda items.
We're expecting to bring an update to the Grant Alvernon area plan in the next month or two, as well as an update to the city's major streets and routes plan.
Great. Thank you for that. Item number 6 is call to the audience. If anyone would like to speak that is not on the agenda tonight, so if you'd like to speak and you're not going to speak about what was on public hearing tonight, you may do so now if you wanted to speak. Seeing none. Round of applause to staff at the end. All right. Go ahead and call to adjourn. Do I have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you all very much.
Thanks, PDSD, for your input.
Thank you all.